Hello, everyone. I'm Michaela, and this is Lactation Station. Welcome back. Today, let's talk a little bit about lactation as a whole. I often talk about the how-to of lactation, but let's talk about, just for a minute, another aspect, because there's so much more to it than just the techniques. For mother and child, we know that breastfeeding is the best nutrition for baby, but that's just one part of lactation. The nurturing side is such a vital part, not just for mom and baby, but for you and your partner as well. Holding and suckling your partner is such a feel-good activity. The release of oxytocin flooding your body has such a calming effect on both of you. And the skin-to-skin contact, you know, feeling your partner's breath on your cheek or maybe on your chest, you know, his hands or her hands gently kneading your breast, hearing them swallow, all of these things are what contribute to the rush of hormones that is being released. When my partner and I are sharing that moment, it makes me feel like, I don't know, like a wonderful, nurturing, earthy goddess. I don't even know what other word to use. I just feel so loved by my partner. And it's like we're in this just little cocoon or bubble, you know, and everything is just right with the world. And those are the moments that define your A&R. And if you're not having those moments, then you need to figure out how to have them because they are amazing. If you're new to A&R or, you know, and or lactation, the best way to learn is by doing. Just like riding a bike or driving a car, it's easier to learn proper suckling techniques by doing rather than reading about it. Even watching, like on YouTube videos, you know, is better than reading about it. At least you get a visual. But honestly, the best way is to just jump right in there and do it. If you fumble around at first and your attempts are somewhat awkward, don't give up. You know, you and your partner, like everything else, you know, with a little practice and a little patience, you'll get to where you want to be. And it may take you a while to establish a good supply, and your supply will constantly readjust based on what kind of supply and demand you put on your breasts. When your partner isn't available, be sure that you're pumping or hand expressing. And remember, continued milk production depends not only on how much your partner suckles, but also how much milk is removed from your breast. So even if, you know, you don't have a long suckling session, if you don't live together and you went to their house or they went to your house and, you know, time just got away from you and you, you know, didn't have a good long session, then hand express or pump for 5 or 10 minutes on each side just to make sure that you drained your breast. If you were to let your partner suckle at only one breast and the other breast would stop producing milk. If they only suckled on the left breast, eventually at some point the right breast would stop producing milk. Even though the hormones that are stimulated by suckling affects both breasts. In fact, and I've talked about it before, there's a protein in the residual milk that's left remaining in your breast that actually suppresses further milk production. So to prevent this from happening, it's important to have frequent suckling or pumping sessions on both breasts. And I put that out there because people ask a lot of strange questions, and I just want to be clear that you need to use both breasts or milk will dry up on the side that you don't use. Now, I was reading a book the other day called Breastfeeding Made Simple, 7 Laws for Nursing Mothers. It's by Nancy Moorbacher, who is an IBCLC, and Kathleen Kendall Tackett, who has a PhD in health, I think. I don't know for sure, but she's also an IBCLC. And they were talking about what they call the comfort zone for breastfeeding babies. And they had a really interesting way of explaining it. And so I'm going to try to explain it to you the way they explained it in their book. And what they said was the comfort zone is where the nipple should be in the baby's mouth for comfortable and effective breastfeeding. Now, there's no reason why this can't translate for A&R and adult partners. You know, I was really intrigued by the idea of this comfort zone. And I've never heard that term before. So I read on, you know, waiting for the explanation. So this is what they say the comfort zone is. The comfort zone is a place in your mouth. You can find it in your own mouth by running your finger or tongue along the roof of your mouth. As you do, you'll notice the section of the palate nearest your front teeth is rigid or bumpy. Go ahead. Feel it. Okay, so moving along. Behind these bumps is an area that is smooth. That's your hard palate. And as you continue to move your finger back past the smooth area nearer to your throat, you'll notice that the roof of your mouth becomes soft. That's the soft palate. The comfort zone is near that area in the mouth where the palate turns from hard to soft. And that's where you want your nipple to be in someone's mouth. This is a great explanation, the comfort zone explanation. And I think it's genius because I've never heard it before, but this is the easiest way to explain latching. It's by far the best explanation that I've ever heard. Why do we want a good latch and to utilize the comfort zone? There's two reasons. It makes suckling comfortable for you by protecting your nipples from friction and compression, and the positioning will give your partner the most milk. With a shallow latch, your partner's tongue will compress your nipple against the hard palate, causing nipple distortion and possibly nipple pain. There you go. Just, you know, explain that. Okay, wait. Let me see. I'm really excited about this comfort zone thing. Explain it like that to your partner, that, you know, your nipple should be pressing against the soft palate at the back of, not at the throat, but at the back of his mouth, the roof of his mouth. And then that's how he'll know that he, you know, he's in the right spot. It won't be on the hard part. It'll be on the soft, gushy part. I'm telling you, ladies, genius. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about understanding milk supply. There's more to understanding milk supply than knowing how much milk you make. You know, your breast is not like a faucet or a spigot or whatever part it's called in your part of the country where the milk is at the same level day and night. Your milk supply has its own natural ebb and flow. Morning is usually when your milk supply is at its highest. And if you express or pump your milk usually in the morning, you'll get more milk than you do later in the day. When scientists measured hormone levels in nursing women, they found that prolactin is at its highest in the middle of the night. Okay, we already knew that. That's why it's so important, especially when you're first starting out, to get that middle of the night pump. In the evening, milk supply is at its lowest. And quite often, you know, I've heard women say that in the evening they pump or express less milk. Well, that's completely natural. It's a natural occurrence and it's no cause for concern over your supply. It's a mistake to believe that because your breasts are no longer feeling full between sessions that your milk is disappearing. That's absolutely not the case. The heaviness and fullness from the early weeks of inducing is not supposed to continue. Once you establish your supply, your hormones start to level out. You know, if you're taking supplements to increase your prolactin, it does, even though you keep taking the supplements, you know, you get to a certain level that's all you're getting. You know, there's no spike in prolactin. You have a nice even level of all your hormones working together. And so your breasts start to lose that fullness. You know, you're still producing milk, but you're not getting engorged or, you know, getting that bigness that, oh man, I miss that feeling. When you first start, you know, that you can't put your bathing suit top on because your boobs spill out the top. That goes away, unfortunately, as everything starts to level out. Once you've established a routine and your hormones have started to settle somewhat and your milk production has been established, your breasts will begin to feel normal again. The feeling of fullness will start to subside. And at this point, you'll probably only feel full if you have an unusually large supply, if you miss a session or go too long between pumping. Now, every woman is different. Suckling and pumping in the early weeks of your inducing journey will help you establish your supply. And be very cautious, ladies. Seriously, be wary of any advice that is, you know, someone telling you, oh, it's the same for all women, or tries to impose, you know, this super rigid, you got to do it, you know, this time and this time and this time and this time, because that's not right. You know, many factors, including your own milk storage capacity, will influence how often you need to pump or suckle. Be sensitive to your needs. Don't listen to rigid advice and develop a schedule that works for you. Now, how your body makes milk is one of the basic facts of life that every woman should understand, yet few do. And there's misconceptions about it everywhere. So understanding milk supply makes it possible to make lactation choices consistent with your long-term goals. When you know how everything works, you will spend less time worrying about your supply and more time relaxing and enjoying your journey. There are two dynamics at work here. They are how full your breasts are, or degree of breast fullness, and how much milk your breast can comfortably hold, or breast storage capacity. Now, knowledge about milk production increased in the 90s and the early 2000s thanks to a research team from Australia. The team was headed up by Dr. Peter Hartman, and Dr. Hartman's team, with the help of a local breastfeeding group in Australia and some very high-tech equipment, set out to learn more about how the breasts make milk. In a few of their studies, they used techniques from the field of topography, which measures mountain terrains and stuff like that. They used those to chart physical changes in the breasts and determine how much milk the breasts will hold. They also used ultrasound to observe internal breast changes during feeding, and their findings have shown that one of the primary factors that affects how quickly or slowly milk is made is how full the breasts are, or the degree of breast fullness. Full breasts make milk slowly. Drained breasts make milk quickly. The Hartman team confirmed that milk production speeds when the breasts are fully drained. And if someone advises you to let your breasts fill up before a session, they are confused on how milk production works. Another thing the Hartman research found was clearly milk supply, while influenced by hormones in the beginning, is most greatly influenced over the long term by milk removal. They also confirmed that each breast regulates its own supply, which explains why you're lopsided. Or why I'm lopsided. Maybe you're not. I am. It drives me batty. But at least now I know there's a scientific reason. So let's talk about breast storage capacity. The concept of breast fullness sounds simple enough, but there is also one other recently discovered factor at work here, and that is a major player in your milk production. And I'm sure that you've heard that breast size has nothing to do with your ability to nurse. That is very, very true. The second factor, called breast storage capacity, goes a long way towards explaining why nursing rhythms vary so much from one couple to the other. Breast storage capacity simply refers to the amount of milk you hold in your breasts. This is absolutely not related to breast size at all. Breast size is determined by fatty tissue in the breast, not glandular tissue. Small-breasted women may have more glandular room to store milk than some of their large-breasted counterparts. Okay, so let's say you have large storage capacity and you only have time at 2 p.m. to pump one breast. So we'll say you pumped 5 ounces. Then at 5, you finally have time to pump the other breast. So you also get 5 ounces. Now your partner suckles every night at 10 p.m. Now, even though there's a large gap of time between all those sessions, with a large storage capacity, your partner still may get 4 to 5 ounces per breast. Because you have that large storage capacity, you can hold more milk and your supply won't drop. Okay, so now let's say you have small storage capacity and you only have time to pump one breast at 2 p.m. and you get 2 ounces. When 5 p.m. rolls around, the breast you didn't pump is full and achy. You pump that breast and get, we'll say 2.5 ounces. Now your partner suckles again at 10 p.m. You barely make it that long, if you do at all. Your breasts are so full and achy from not being pumped sooner, especially the one that was last pumped at 2. So because you have smaller breast storage, you can't go so long without some kind of relief. And if you're not draining the breast because you don't have the storage, your body's going to say, well, we're full, but no milk is going anywhere. So she must not need milk. We're going to stop making it. So it's really important if you, you know, if you get really achy and full after 3 hours between pumps and you need to pump again right away, then it's a safe guess to say you have a smaller storage capacity. If you can go, you know, those 3 hours and then pump and everything just kind of feels normal to you, there's no achiness and you're not feeling any fullness and you're still getting your 5 ounces, then that's also a safe guess to say that you probably have large capacity. And, you know, I'm honestly not a doctor. I'm not an RN. And I'm still learning myself, so I don't know if there's a way to, you know, accurately tell if you have large or small storage capacity. I know that I'm pretty sure I have small storage capacity because when if I skip my morning pump and wait till my noon pump, by the time it gets here, I am so full and my breasts ache so bad and I just want to get that milk out. You know, from what I've read, it leads me to believe that if I had a larger storage capacity, I would not be feeling that uncomfortableness at the next pumping session. If somebody has more information about how to tell if you have large or small storage capacity, by all means, shoot me an email and let me know, because I'd really be interested in knowing. Okay, ladies, so I hope that helps some of you who are, you know, to have a better understanding of some of the most basic dynamics of milk supply. You know, and if you're just starting out, it's not as hard as it sounds. You just got to stick with it and have patience. All right, well, that's about it for tonight. Don't forget to join our Facebook group. I'm still working on the website. Oh my gosh, I have so much going on. I have to figure out what I can take off my plate at this point and get things done. We're going to have our giveaway next week. My newsletter's coming out. I look forward to talking to all of you guys. This is Michaela at Lactation Station. Have a great night.